I've selected this verse from the, it's actually from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. And I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport to it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Acharyamam Vajaniyan. Acharyamam Vajaniyan. Navamanyeta Kadichit. Navamanyeta Karhichit. Namarcha Bhujasuyeta. Namarcha Bhujasuyeta. Sarvadeva Mayoguru. Sarvadeva Mayoguru. Acharyam mam vijaniyam. Navamanyeta karichit. Namarcha bhuja suyeta. Sarvadeva mayoguru. Okay. Others? Vaishnavis. Acharyam, the spiritual master. Mam, myself. Vajaniyat, one should know. Na avamanyeta, one should never disrespect. Garichit, at any time. Na, never. Martyabudhya, with the idea of his being an ordinary man. Asuyeta, one should be envious. Sarvadeva, of all demigods, Maya representative, Guru, the spiritual master. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. Purport. This is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 17th chapter, text 27, spoken by Lord Krishna when he was questioned by Uddhava regarding the four social and spiritual orders of society. The Lord was specifically instructing how a brahmachari should behave under the care of a spiritual master. A spiritual master is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by his disciples. He's like a parent. Without the attentive service of his parents, a child cannot grow to manhood. Similarly, without the care of the spiritual master, one cannot rise to the plane of transcendental service. The spiritual master is also called Acharya, or a transcendental professor of spiritual science. The Manusamhita explains the duties of an Acharya, describing that a bona fide spiritual master accepts charge of disciples, teaches them the Vedic knowledge with all its intricacies, and gives them their second birth. The ceremony performed to initiate a disciple into the study of the spiritual science is called Upaniti, or the function that brings one nearer to the spiritual master. One who cannot be brought nearer to the spiritual master cannot have a sacred thread, and thus he is indicated to be a Shudra. The sacred thread on the body of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is a symbol of initiation by the spiritual master. It is worth nothing if worn merely to boast high parentage. The duty of the spiritual master is to initiate a disciple with the sacred thread ceremony, and after the samskar or purificatory process, the spiritual master actually begins to teach the disciple about the Vedas. A person born a Sudra is not barred from such spiritual initiation, provided he is approved by the spiritual master, who is duly authorized to award a disciple the right to be a Brahmin if he finds him perfectly qualified. In the Vayupurana, an Acharya is defined as one who knows the import of all Vedic literature, explains the purpose of the Vedas, abides by the rules and regulations, and teaches the disciples to act in the same way. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as the spiritual master. Therefore, in his dealings of an Acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It is worthwhile to take shelter of such a steady devotee, who is called Ashraya Vigraha, or the manifestation of the form of the Lord, of whom one must take shelter. Actually, in the previous verse, something about that too, so I'll just read that since it's on the same subject. This is the translation. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. And Prabhupada says about that, the relationship of a disciple with a spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. A spiritual master always represents himself as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as the manifested representation of Godhead. I'm just skipping ahead in this purport here. Towards the end, Prabhupada quotes, he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in his prayers to the spiritual master, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that all the revealed scriptures accept the spiritual master to be identical with the personality of Godhead, because he is very dear and confidential servant of the Lord. Gaudiya Vaishnavas therefore worship Sri Gurudev, the spiritual master, in the light of his being the servitor of the personality of Godhead. In all ancient literatures of devotional service, and in the more recent songs of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and other unalloyed Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is always considered either one of the confidential associates of Srimati Radharani, or a manifested representation of Srila Nityananda Prabhu. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. So I will try to start the ball rolling, so to speak, this morning, in attempting glorifying Srila Prabhupada. The reason I selected this verse was recently my father passed away, and one morning I was, I was praying to Krishna, and then I was I thought to myself, well, actually even more important than praying to Krishna is I should pray to Prabhupada. I was praying to Prabhupada for the spiritual welfare of my father. You know, I was thinking, okay, well, now he's left his body, now what? Where is he going to, what's happening? What's going to happen to him? Where is he going to go? So I was praying to Krishna, Krishna, you know, please give my father some mercy. Give him, he's did a lot of service indirectly, helping me, and please help him. And then I thought, well, it's probably even more important to pray to Prabhupada because, you know, that's our philosophy, that it's, the spiritual master is the transparent via medium. So, you know, it's more effective. And to pray to, so I was praying to Prabhupada, and then it just occurred to me. I said, "Wow!" I just started reflecting on the position of the spiritual master. That here are these two personalities who are very important personalities in my life. But one, I'm praying to, for the mercy. I'm praying to Srila Prabhupada for the mercy, for mercy for my father. So in other words, it just helped me. Get perspective on the whole thing, that, what an amazing elevated position, the spiritual master is, that he's somebody not that you pray for, like I was praying for my father, but rather it's somebody we pray to, praying to, and the reason we're doing that is because as we hear, every day we sing and we hear repeatedly, the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the super soul. He's the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it's a very elevated position. And we just heard from this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so that was why I chose this verse. I thought, at least that's the first and foremost understanding that should be there in everybody's mind, every devotee's mind, that the spiritual master, Sakshat Dadivain, is the external manifestation of the Supersoul. And as we sing every morning, Sakshat Dadivain, Asamasta Sastra. And then the very next verse, Yasya Prashada Bhagavat, that it's only by the mercy of the spiritual master that we or anybody else can make advancement in devotional service. If he's pleased, you make advancement. If he's not pleased, Nagatith Katopi, your whereabouts are unknown. You don't make any advancement. So once again, it's such an amazing, important personality, the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And this kind of led me to the next point about Agyata Sukriti. And so once again, this is, in relation to this meditation I was having about my father, I was thinking, well, my father, he helped me a lot over the years. He gave me a lot of donations, and I used that to, remain a Sankirtan devotee and, engage in my service like that. So, and then I started thinking, and this occurred to me actually just yesterday, the day before I was preparing for the class, that, wait a second, I mean, it's not just my father. When you stop and think about it, like, Prabhupada did something which, gave us an amazing opportunity for probably hundreds of millions of people to get a Gyata Sukriti. In other words, aside from the, I'm trying to appreciate the accomplishments of the glories of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so aside from the fact that he had maybe, 4,000 initiated disciples? 5,000. 5,000 initiated disciples. And there's a significant number of those who are still seriously practicing devotional service. And, of course, they appreciate Prabhupada. Some of them had close personal association with Prabhupada, so that, they loved him as a person, because they actually they were so fortunate they had the opportunity to interact with Prabhupada in a personal way. So they're appreciating Prabhupada. And there were others of us, myself more or less fits in the second category, that had either very little or no personal association with Prabhupada. But we're appreciating Prabhupada as somebody who's given us this knowledge, somebody who's connected us to the parampara, somebody who's given us, the information that we need to, advance spiritually, have the chance to go back home, back to Godhead, perfect our lives. So we're appreciating. And then there's another category of grand disciples who also didn't have personal association with Prabhupada, but are appreciating, Prabhupada for that same reason. But then beyond that, that's probably numbering there, tens of thousands anyway, right there. But then beyond that, there's once again, the number, the figure, I couldn't guess, but you know, there's a whole this whole big category of human beings and even other beings and non-human species who have come in contact in some way or another with the Krishna consciousness movement. And as a result, they are benefited. You know, that's our philosophy, agyata sukriti, unknowing benefit. In other words, how many people have received a book? From what I can understand, I think I heard a figure back about 6 months ago that they said there's like been 500 million books distributed since the beginning of the movement. In other words, 500 million books. And Bajranarayan Maharaj, when he gave class here once, he made the point. Is that an accurate figure? Anybody else heard that? Archita, you heard that? Half a billion books. 640 million books distributed as of whenever that figure, you know, that they calculated that. And every book, according to Bajranarayan Maharaj, is read by, I mean, he said, I think, 10 people in the class on average. But it's, so definitely more than one. So, you know, all those people, they get immense spiritual benefit from that. I mean, I heard Devamrita Swami, in a Shastra Krit can help me out with this one, that Devamrita Swami claims that he heard a lecture where Prabhupada said, if they read one line in my book, I'll try to get it quoted correctly, and you can help me. If they read one line in my book, they're guaranteed a human body. And he said he listened to that over and over again, because like when he heard it, he was so like, wow, this is like so far out, that he listened to it many more times. How does it actually go? Really? So he heard Papa say that in a lecture. So he doesn't have a microphone. So Devamrita Maharaj said that he heard Papa say in a lecture that even if they just touch the book, even if they don't take it, they just touch it and they give it back, they get a human body just for that. And he's so amazed when he heard that he listened to it repeatedly, right? Just to make sure he was hearing, you know, can I believe my ears? So he just to make sure he played it over and over again to make sure he heard it. So, that, you know, that's, and that's just the books. What to speak of people who have taken prasadam? What to speak of people who have heard chanted or heard the chanting or been to a temple? And it's like, you know, it's we're talking about like little hundreds and hundreds of millions of people. So, and this is all, you know, Prabhupada is responsible for all this. He's given literally hundreds and millions of people the opportunity to get a human body again in their next lifetime. And along with that comes the opportunity to engage in devotional service again. You see, so that's amazing thing if you stop and think about it. You know, that's like, you know, I mean, it's okay. It's, you know, not everybody's going to become a devotee necessarily in this lifetime, but, you know, what's one lifetime? I mean, the golden age of Lord Chaitanya goes from 10,000 years, 500 have passed, so there's 9,500 years left. There's still a big window of opportunity, and Prabhupada is really kind of like, you know, put the thing in high gear. I mean, he came over, you know, started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and it's been the most auspicious thing that's happened to this planet. Whether, you know, people know it or not, well, they don't know it, but we know it. It's been the most auspicious thing that's happened to this planet, perhaps, you know. It's so long that's on the same level as, like, you know, the advent of Lord Chaitanya or things of that nature. It's like an amazing thing, amazing boon or benediction for human society, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is giving people who wouldn't have otherwise really got it, the opportunity to take birth again as human beings and continue in their devotional service. So that's really amazing. And I mean, once there was one conversation where, I forget where it was, devotees asked Prabhupada, is there a way to avoid World War III? And you know, Prabhupada said, yeah, you know, if you preach very sincerely and vigorously, then, you know, maybe World War III can be averted. And if you stop and think about it, at least from my way of thinking, I think there's something to that. Because really, when I analyze it, I think to myself, well, why shouldn't there be World War III? And it's like, what? I can't think of a reason why there shouldn't be World War III. This place is so sinful. I mean, you know, every day, like Prabhupada in his lectures, I think just the other day we heard, he made the point about how, you know, the animal slaughter, as a result of animal slaughter, maybe it was when we were hearing the memories downstairs, devotees were, you know, making the point that, you know, there's a direct correlation between animal slaughter and war. So there's so much animal slaughter going on in the world today. I mean, it's kind of, you know, and it's, the amount of animal slaughter that goes on now, I don't know any figures, but it's I'm sure it's like significantly, you know, what's the word, not exponentially, but arithmetically, arithmetically, I can't remember the different types of progressions, but it's a lot more than what was going on pre-World War II or pre-World War I, simply because of the advanced technology and transportation and all this kind of thing. So there's like, you know, a horrendous amount of animal slaughter of all different types of animals that's going on today. And the reaction for that is, you know, war. But why isn't it happening? Well, my explanation is that it's because Krishna is like holding back. You know, the Sankirtan movement is here on the planet, and he's, you know, he's, okay, let's give these people, they don't deserve it, but let's, you know, give these people every possible opportunity. It's kind of like, it's a way that Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is reciprocating with Srila Prabhupada's efforts. You know, Prabhupada made all this effort to come over and establish the Krishna conscious movement. So it's kind of like he's giving people every chance because really, I mean, karmically, this whole human society should be obliterated if you know, once again, if you, you know, consider how much sinful activity, not just animal slaughter, I just mentioned that with the speak of abortion and, you know, all the other things. It's, you know, I mean, all the regulative principles, for instance, are being broken, you know, like to the max. So there's really no reason why, you know, something horrible shouldn't happen other than that it's special mercy because the Krishna conscious movement is going on and it would disturb the whole thing. So Krishna's going, okay, you know, just we'll hold it back, you know, and give these people every chance possible. So that's there. And, you know, then, so that's on a, like, appreciating Prabhupada as a, you know, great personality. But also, you know, Prabhupada, was, and, as I touched upon this before, should be appreciated as, you know, in an individual way, like, you know, for the impact he had on different devotees' lives. And actually, I'll just mention one thing here. I might back up a little bit. Notes I kind of missed. But well, anyway, on that point, on the point of the impact, everybody knows Hari Sari. You know? Hari Sari wrote these beautiful literatures, you know, the Transcendental Diary. And then, but it was always a mystery. And, you know, they're very well written. They're very beautifully done. You know, he really did a great job. When you read it, you actually feel like you're there. You feel like you're right there with him and with Prabhupada and in that situation with the devotees. And I knew Hari Sari. I was transferred to Australia in 1978. He was the GBC there, so I had the good fortune of, you know, meeting him and working under him for several years there. And but it always you know, seemed strange to me that he was Prabhupada's personal servant for 13 months. And then at one point he just decided that, you know, he just decided, well, actually, I think I'd like to go preach. And so, you know, that was brought to Prabhupada's attention, and, you know, Prabhupada gave him his blessings. That was actually at that time that he returned to Australia and he started being the GBC there. But I thought to myself, wait a second, why would somebody, you know, leave being Prabhupada's personal servant? You know, especially if you've been doing it for 13 months, and you could tell from when you read the book, they had such a close relationship. You know, Prabhupada really liked him a lot, and Hari Sari had obviously great, you know, affection and love for Prabhupada. And, you know, later on I found out, I kind of inquired, and the real reason was that, you know, at that point Prabhupada's health was declining. You know, he was with them up until the beginning of 1977, and Prabhupada's health was declining, and Prabhupada was so determined to, you know, continue on with different responsibilities, you know, the pushing on the missionary activities. And, you know, anyway, Hari Sari, he couldn't stand to see that. In other words, it was too difficult, you know, for him emotionally to see Prabhupada decline like that in his health. It was hard. And that's why he gave up the service. That's the actual reason, you know, that he gave up the service, because he just could see that Prabhupada wasn't going to just, you know, back up and just drop everything and just do everything to recover his health, but he was going to stay involved to a certain extent and just he didn't want to be there to watch the whole thing happen because it would be too painful for him. So in other words, this, and you mentioned that as an example of the kind of impact that, you know, Prabhupada had on, you know, the lives of devotees who were very close to him, and even devotees like most of us don't well experience something like that, but maybe all of us experience something like this, which was that when you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, your whole life became turned around. You know, I mean, I know that's, I'm an example of that. My whole life was turned around. I was 21 years old and I dropped out of college two or three times. I lost count. And really, I wasn't going anyplace fast. You know, things were really kind of like not very good. And then I came in contact with devotees. I came in contact with a devotee. I got a book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Practically the next day or the next day after that, I went to the temple. And I met devotees, heard the philosophy, you know, in the lecture, and went home and was marching around my room chanting Hare Krishna. In other words, my whole life just was kind of taken and just going, the whole, you know, coming in contact with Prabhupada in the form of his books, his devotees, the chanting, the movement in general, just, you know, turned my whole life around completely, you know. And I'm sure I'm just one of thousands. Literally thousands of people who could say the same thing, and probably if I just took a quick survey, probably 2/3 or 3/4 of the hands in this room would probably go up if I asked, did anybody else feel like that about when they came in contact with the Krishna conscious movement? Yeah. So it's like that. So that was the kind of thing that once again, that's just another further point which we can appreciate Prabhupada upon. And just backing up a little bit here, the point of the exalted position of the spiritual master. So, I mentioned how when every morning we're saying Sakshad Dharit Vain, that the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the super soul, and it's only by his mercy that, one can advance in devotional service. Without his mercy, you don't advance at all. But aside from that, some other points that, are worth mentioning is, I think it's the fifth verse, Nikunjayuno Rati Kali Siddhya Yaya Libu. That verse, we sing the Sanskrit. We don't usually, some of the songs, we don't recite the English translation, but it's a good idea every now and then to, if you have it memorized, to think about it, or if you don't, whip out a songbook, open up, and actually have a look at what we're singing and think about it a little bit, because it really gets you, gives you some an interesting, kind of mood or meditation. The spiritual master, he's assisting the gopis who are making different tasteful arrangements for the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. In other words, like, once again, it's just like a wake-up, hey, wait a second, who am I dealing with here? I'm dealing with somebody who's assisting the gopis in making different tasteful arrangements for the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. That's, once again, who Prabhupada was. And then every, of course, when we sing Sri Guru Vandanam, in Guru Puja, it's saying that it's only the mercy of the spiritual master is the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. It's such an amazing personality. There's another line that says, I pray that my consciousness be purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. In other words, here's somebody he's speaking, and just because he's so intimately related with Krishna, that just his speech, just hearing his speech, purifies your consciousness. That's who Srila Prabhupada was. Somebody who, when you just listen to him speak, you purify and you're elevated in spiritual consciousness. And we kind of like experience this on a regular weekly basis here in New Dwarka because we listen to Prabhupada's lectures. And so often, we have like a little club, myself, Archita, and Sachin, and this happens regularly. At the end of the lecture, we just kind of like, we're standing there, we have the sheet there, and the lecture finished, and we just look, wow, was that a lecture? Was that the most powerful lecture you ever, it happens, like, they can't each be the most powerful lecture, but that's how you feel. When you listen to the lecture, and you just feel at the end, like, wow, that was powerful, that was amazing, That's the effect it has. So that's Prabhupada, such like a potent preacher of Krishna consciousness that just listening to him speak, it's an enlightening experience just hearing Prabhupada speak. Then another point was, ocean of mercy. You know, say that, you know, spiritualness is a friend of the poor, ocean of mercy. What does that mean, ocean of mercy? Well, ocean, we already touched upon that. Ocean of mercy in that, you know, he did so much to benefit so many. You know, so many people have been benefited by Prabhupada's mission, you know, his preaching, his movement like that. And another point that should be mentioned here is that in order to do this, Prabhupada made incredible personal sacrifice. You know, everybody knows the story. I won't elaborate. But, you know, when Prabhupada came over on the boat, he had two heart attacks on the Jaladuta on the way over. And Hari Sari, you know, when he was here about 4 or 5 years ago, he was, you know, he gave like little seminars, and one evening he was on Prabhupada's health, and he said something that really stuck in my mind. He said, actually, it was never, Prabhupada's health was never good. You know, and it's like it was, sometimes it was better than others, but it was never good. And Prabhupada didn't enjoy good health the whole time, from the time, you know, from 1965 when he came over on the Jaladuta till 1977 when he departed. It was, he had different health issues going on as a regular, you know, a constant sort of a thing. So it was, you know, really great personal sacrifice that Prabhupada did what he did, that he came, and then once he came, that he traveled, you know, and traversed the globe 13 times. And not just kind of, you know, going sightseeing, but really going for it, you know, sleeping hardly at all, you know, sleeping 4 hours maximum, and, you know, rising so early, working on his books, and, you know, the, when everybody else was asleep, and then by the time everybody got up, he's finished and ready, you know, managing the society, and then so many different, you know, speaking, public preaching engagements, and so forth and so on. You know, it's like, it's common knowledge. Disciples all over the world said, you know, they just couldn't keep up with him. They couldn't even keep up with him on the morning walks. You know, when Papa went for his morning walks, disciples who were like less than half his age would say, well, you know, he's got such a pace. He walks at such a fast pace, such brisk. You can't, you know, have to run to keep up with him. What to speak of his activities? You know, when Papa was in India, and he'd do a program, and then he'd leave that program and go to another program, and then he'd leave that And, you know, the disciples were just getting to that program when Prabhupada was just getting ready to leave, and they couldn't keep, you know, the Lord just couldn't keep pace with Prabhupada. You know, so he was on the, you know, and Prabhupada didn't get jet lag. It's just another interesting point, you know. Prabhupada didn't get jet lag. Prabhupada did things so that wherever he was, he just immediately plugged into that time, you know. And the devotees were, once again, you know, like they were astounded. How is this possible? You know, we're, you know, his Prabhupada, he's 70-plus years old, and he had all these health issues, but somehow or another he's just able to just, you know, keep going like that. Whereas the devotees were out of commission for, you know, it took him a day or two. He wore out servants. How many servants did Prabhupada have? Mostly he just wore them out. They just had to, you know, drop by the wayside and get another one because they just couldn't do it. So anyway, so great. He did it, whatever he did, with, you know, great personal sacrifice. It was not easy. You know, Prabhupada tolerated, voluntarily accepted a lot of both physical and mental inconvenience, you know, to do what he did, to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. And friend of the poor, I mean, what does that mean, friend of the poor? It means, once again, we're talking about this already a little bit, so I'll just very quickly, that basically people in the Kali Yuga don't deserve this opportunity, you know. We're, you know, we don't deserve it. We're too sinful. There's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Yesham Tvantikatam Papam. Only those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives, whose sinful activities are completely eradicated, can engage in devotional service with determination. So there's nobody in that category in Kali Yuga. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like the lowest of the low of the low, you know, the people in the Kali Yuga. So really nobody deserves it. So Prabhupada is a friend of the poor. People are very poor in spiritual understanding in the Kali Yuga. So Prabhupada is the friend. It means he came and gave the opportunity to engage in devotion, find out about Krishna consciousness, and engage in devotional service to people who really don't really deserve it. You know, I mean, the people of the, you know, human population of the world today. So that was friend of the poor. And you know, shade. And we also pray, give us the shade of your lotus feet, so, which means that Prabhupada gave shelter. He gave shelter. You know, it was so practical, you know. He didn't just like go around and preach and then say, well, if they get it, they get it. If they don't, they don't. No, he made all sorts of arrangements, you know, to take care of the people who he could see were interested, who were getting a little bit, you know, were prepared to try to take the next step and come forward and actually try to practice Krishna consciousness, accept it, and, you know, try to live this kind of a life. And Prabhupada made all sorts of arrangements to give us facility. Like, you know, here at New Dwarka is one super great example of that. You know, I mean, what an amazing thing. You know, and there's so many temples like this all over the world where people, you know, who are serious about practicing Krishna consciousness can come and they get everything. All their material necessities are taken care of, which is no mean thing these days. You know, as Kali Yuga is progressing, we're seeing that having your material necessities taken care of is actually, like, you know, that's something, it's a good thing, because it's not so easy as it was like in the 70s where the economy was different even. So anyway, Prabhupada has, you know, made all arrangements, you know, to give people facility to find out about this, you know, this knowledge and to practice it and dedicate their lives to it. And then the last one is his fame is spread all over the three worlds, referring to the, so Prabhupada's, you know, basically what that means is that the activities of the pure devotee, the spiritual master, such as Srila Prabhupada, are appreciated, you know, whether we know it or not, and pretty much we don't. It's not just here on earth by his, you know, the few followers that it's appreciated. There's like an invisible, Prabhupada says this in one purport in the Bhagavatam, there's like an invisible chain of cooperation between, you know, the human beings on earth and people like Prabhupada and the higher beings such as demigods and rishis, and they're all aware. You know, that's my understanding of that his fame is spread all over the three worlds. Prabhupada's activities and his glories are still, you know, known and appreciated by these higher personalities and, you know, the different echelons of the universe like that. So that's, you know, just also something to bear in mind. And yeah, just on that point of, you know, Prabhupada, the impact Prabhupada had on the lives of individuals who came in contact with him, just to share an early memory of mine, that I came to the temple for the first time in the middle of April, 1975, and I just missed Prabhupada. I came on for the Sunday feast, and Prabhupada just left for Los Angeles the day before. Prabhupada had just left for Los Angeles the day before. You know, that morning, Saturday morning, and I came for the Sunday feast, so Sunday afternoon. But the thing, one thing that really sticks in my mind and really impressed me is that when I started, you know, coming, staying at the temple, whatever devotees I would talk to, they go, so did you hear Prabhupada when he was here? Because, you know, I'm just some guest, they didn't know whether I was there or not. And I said, no, I just missed him. And they said, what a shame, you just missed him. Prabhupada was here, and Prabhupada said this, and Prabhupada said that. And everybody was talking about Prabhupada. Everybody was talking, you know, from the top to the bottom, all the devotees, Prabhupada was the talk of the town, so to speak. You know, and everybody would have their different things that they remembered from his lecture, from everything. And I was, you know, wow, this is pretty far out. This guy must be, this person must be really an amazing person that everybody, without exception, everybody is talking about him. You know, whoever you bump into in this temple, they're telling you something about Prabhupada, something he said in the lecture, something he did like that. So that was, you know, that was pretty impressive. And, you know, it didn't take long before myself or anybody could figure out the reason for that. You know, the reason for that, because, you know, devotees could sense, they could feel that, you know, Prabhupada was somebody, he was more than just somebody who practiced what he preached. Certainly he did that. Prabhupada practiced what he preached. But more than just practiced what he preached, I think devotees had a sense of feeling or felt that Prabhupada had realized what he was preaching. You know, it's more than that, he was setting a good example. You know, he did that, right? But beyond that, he realized it. You know, that was, at least that was the conviction. Well, that is the conclusion of the Shastras, and that was the conviction of the devotees, as neophyte as we were, as brand new as we were. Devotees were walking around with that conviction that, yeah, Prabhupada's a pure devotee. You know, that was our conviction. You know, Prabhupada is, you know, he's not just that he knows the philosophy and he's also practicing it. No, Prabhupada's a pure devotee. He's the real deal. You know, he's realized these things. And that was like everybody. You know, again, you could perceive it. That's the way devotees were thinking, and that's the way you started to think. I mean, I'll give two really quick examples of that. Back in, I really never had, like, I couldn't say, you could say practically no one-on-one association with Prabhupada. The closest thing I had to one-on-one association with Prabhupada was when I got my second initiation in Mayapur in 1976. And I'll say something about that in a second. But the first one was Prabhupada was going through. He was coming from Los Angeles going to London. And this was towards the end of 1973, late November, December, I can't remember. And so he was just making like a pit stop at the temple because, you know, he had some time in between flights or whatever. So the leader said, okay, everybody come back. You know, Prabhupada's going to give Bhagavad Gita class in the afternoon there, late afternoon. So we all came back from whatever we were doing, and Prabhupada gave the class. He gave class on 4:13, Chaturvana, Maestro stuff. And at the end of the class, Prabhupada asked for questions, and there was like one or two questions. And then after that, Prabhupada said, so are there any more questions? So nobody raised a hand. And I thought, oh, okay, that's probably going to be it. Then Prabhupada asked again, are there any more questions? So I thought to myself, I was, you know, in the temple about 6 months at that point. I wasn't initiated. And I thought to myself, okay, well, come on, somebody ask a question. You know, it's obvious Prabhupada wants to keep talking. Somebody ask a question. And nobody raised a hand. And, you know, this is all happening within just seconds, but then, you know, I was sitting there, I was thinking to myself, come on, somebody raise a hand. You know, I'm like a new person here. Somebody, you know, these are devotees who are like there 2, 3, 4 years. Somebody ask a question. It's obvious that Prabhupada wants to keep, I was feeling uncomfortable for Prabhupada. I was feeling like he wants to keep speaking. Come on. So then I just thought to myself, well, if he asks again, I'll raise my hand, you know, because this is getting embarrassing. That's how I felt. I don't know why. I just felt like that. So sure enough, Prabhupada asked again. He said, are there any more questions? So I just raised my hand. I didn't really even have a question. You know, I just had to think really fast. So I raised my hand, and they called on me. And Shruti Kirti was his secretary. So, you know, they said, okay, what's your question? I said, well, Prabhupada, could you say something about the mercy of Lord Chaitanya? So I guess I didn't speak loudly and clearly enough. And it wasn't a proper question anyway. I really didn't have a question, you know. But I just figured I better, you know, I had to ask something. So I just did that. And then at that point, Prabhupada was, when I asked the question, he was in his Vyasasana. He was just kind of leaning back, you know, relaxed like that. Like they had the bolsters there. And so I asked the question, and he didn't hear. So he looked over to Shruti Kirti and said, what is that? So Shruti Kirti leaned over to Prabhupada, and he repeated something to him. And I couldn't hear what he said to Prabhupada. And he doesn't remember. I've spoken to him since, and he can't remember the whole incident, you know. But he repeated something to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada, after Shruti Kirti said something, Prabhupada was leaning back like this. You know, and then Shruti Kirti repeated the question or whatever into his ear. And then Prabhupada sat up very straight. And he said, it is already said, Padam Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So continue doing Sankirtan, and you'll be victorious. And that was it. You know, no further questions, nothing. And I was just kind of like, whoa, what happened? You know, I was kind of like flabbergasted. Did I just get chastised? What happened? What was it? What? You know, the whole thing, because, you know, it happened so fast, and it was so powerful. I said, did I just get chastised? What happened there? You know, and then devotees came up to him and said, oh, congratulations, Bhakti Jeff. I said, what? Oh, you just got a personal instruction from Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, I never, I just always remembered that. And, I mean, I won't say that that's the one and only reason why I'm still doing Sankirtan to this day, but it's figured in there. Because, like, I always remember that, and I always think, like, you know, it's like Prabhupada did say that. So a lot of times when I come to a crossroads and think, well, should I do this or should I do that? I just remember that. Well, Prabhupada did say, continue doing Sankirtan and you'll be victorious, which I've always taken to mean that, just, you know, you'll get out of Maya sooner or later. It hasn't happened yet, but anyway. But, and I just think of like, as you know, like savings bonds, you know, it's a sure thing. If I continue doing Sankirtan, I'll be victorious. So that, you know, Prabhupada gave that instruction on that day. But the point is that, you know, just like a few words from Prabhupada and, you know, shapes a person's life. And as I mentioned the second time, and this is, I'll just try to present this in a very positive way. And this was the kind of the one and only personal association I had with Prabhupada was when I got second initiation. It was 1976 in Mayapur. And this was a special, well, I guess every year was a special year, but this year it was special in the sense that it was the year that Radha Damodar was kind of like really building up and had become a really, you know, powerful yatra in and of itself. They had 6 buses, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Jan Swami over that year had made like 100 devotees. 100 devotees. And Prabhupada was wanting Tamal Krishna Maharaj at that point, he wanted him to manage in India. You know, he wanted to be the GBC, but he, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, amazing relationship he had with Prabhupada. He somehow or another got Prabhupada to give him permission to preach in America. And then, you know, Prabhupada says, you know, so there's this one famous instance with Prabhupada. Tamal Krishna was in Prabhupada's room in the Lotus Building, you know, that little room he had on the second floor. And Prabhupada was asking, so, you know, what's the report? He said, well, I'm doing this preaching in America. He says, what is that preaching? And Prabhupada actually challenged him, what is that preaching? And Tamal Krishna was ready for it. He was ready for this, you know. So Prabhupada said, what is that preaching? Because, you know, he wanted to come back and be the GBC. So Tamal Krishna had the devotees, these new devotees come in one by one with a long stem rose. And they came in with the rose, and they, you know, Prabhupada was sitting behind this little, you know, this low table there, and they placed the rose on the table, and they paid their dandavats, one after the other, boom, boom, boom. Not 100, you know, I don't know how many, but, you know, a lot. And then Prabhupada, what was happening, and then after Prabhupada was sitting back and was beaming, he said, yes, that is, you know, he was pleased. So, you know. So anyway, so that year, 100, there was 100 devotees got first initiation, and it was about, I can't remember, between 13 and 16 second initiations, and there was 6 sannyasa initiations. It was a big, you know, big jagya, and it was on Gopunim Day. Archita got second initiation? You got second initiation. How many were there? About 15, 16, right? Something like that. So anyway, so they had the jagya in the temple room, and then the arrangement was that the devotees who got second and were getting second initiation would go up to Prabhupada's room, and later on, I can't remember, you know, like around lunchtime sort of thing, and Prabhupada would give each devotee the Gayatri Mantra. So we went up there, and there was, you know, as I said, about a dozen of us or so, and one by one, the devotees were going into Prabhupada's room, and, you know, and they would come out, and when the devotee came out, all the other devotees would say, so what happened? And, you know, some devotee would say, oh, Prabhupada asked me, you know, where are you from, and what does your father do, and this type of thing, you know, what is your service? Anyway, to make a long story short, you know, I was one of the last ones, you know, so I was kind of like thinking, wow, this is going to be great, this is going to be wonderful, you know, Prabhupada, first time sitting one-to-one. So I went in, finally it was my turn, I went in, and Pushtakrishna was the secretary. It's actually kind of a small room, but it seemed really big at the time, but I've been to it since, and it's kind of small, but so Pushtakrishna was in there. Prabhupada was sitting behind, once again, at that low desk. And they told me to sit down next to Prabhupada. I kneeled down next to Prabhupada. Someone was like, Prabhupada's here. Pushtakrishna would have been, you know, kind of where the ghee lamps are there. And I'm kneeling down here. So, and Prabhupada puts his thread on. And he says, okay. I'm serious, though. I'm serious moving. He says, okay, so, you know, now watch and just do what I do. So he said, okay. He said, okay, now you do it. So I was sitting there. Well, I wasn't doing anything else. I didn't have my cell phone. There were no cell phones. And I said, all I was doing was just sitting here and watching. I thought, okay, I'm going to get this. Okay. And Papa said, no. He said, no. Watch again. And he was annoyed. You know, so he did it a second time. I better watch. I better really watch. So he goes again, you know. And I'm watching him. And, you know, he's just moving his fingers. And then he said, now you do it. And I tried it for the second time. And I got it wrong. So I guess I got it wrong because when I started doing it, he looked at me and said, what are you, stupid? Like that. Really, like, upset, you know. And then I just kind of, like, went into shock. Because, in other words, here I am, the first time one-on-one with Prabhupada, my one and only, and I figured that would probably be my one and only association with Prabhupada, and I'm getting chastised. He's telling me, he's asking me, what am I, stupid? And I just thought, oh my God, I might as well just jump off the balcony here, you know? Anyway, so I just had to think fast. So I just thought, this is like the worst case scenario. You heard that expression work? This was the worst case scenario. Here it was. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll just have to drop everything and just try to apologize. Forget about everything, you know, any kind of behaving in a certain way. I said, sure, Papa, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I guess this is the first time I've ever been in your personal presence, and I guess I'm just really nervous, and I'm just kind of like, can't think straight or something. I don't know. I can't. Please, I'm so sorry to, you know, disturb, upset you, but please show me one more time. I promise I'll pay, you know, really close attention. I'll get it right. So he didn't say anything. He just, okay, you know, watch again. You know, and he did it. And it's really, I never prayed so hard in my whole life. I just prayed like anything, yeah. And he said, okay, now you do it. And I did it. And I was really, I guess I must have got it right because he didn't yell at me again. So then he said, okay, now repeat after me. And he went, om, om. He said it one word at a time. He went, got through the first mantra, one word at a time, second mantra. And then about halfway through the third mantra, he goes like this. And and Pushtakrishna, who was in the room, he was his secretary, his sannyasi at that time, he, from across the room, he said to me, I'm right there next to Prabhupada, and he says to me from across the room, he says, okay, well, you can go now. I said, what? I said, Prabhupada's only halfway through the third mantra. And he said, I'm sorry, he's indicated you can go. And I just went, oh. Well, what could I say? I mean, you know. So I just thought, okay, thank you. And I paid my obeisances, and I think I just crawled out backwards, you know. But the reason I mention it is because, you know, first, well, what's interesting to note here is that, you know, that's, if a mundane, somebody, I am mundane, but somebody who wasn't a devotee could think, well, how dare that person treat me like that? You know, I didn't, well, I hardly did anything. Well, I mean, I was, you know, I didn't know, and how could he be so harsh? And but, you know, I can honestly say that that thought, has, now that was 76, so this is what, it's almost 40 years ago, 38 years ago, but that thought never even came into my mind for 36 years. About 2 years ago, maybe it was this day or the Vyas Puja day, I was reflecting. I said, oh, you know, I suppose I could have got resentful or something like that. I mean, in other words, I never thought like that. Because that's because, why? Because that's because what we felt about Prabhupada. And I was convinced that this is mercy. You know, it was difficult, but I was convinced that this is mercy. And I got that confirmed by Tomal Krishna Maharaj. I told him that back around 1993, and the whole story. And he told me, actually, you got Prabhupada's mercy. And that's how I felt all along, that it was mercy. I got the mercy of the pure devotee, even though it came in the form of chastisement. You know, that's the kind of appreciation, understanding that we all had of Prabhupada. That he was the external manifestation of the super soul. Prabhupada could have went out and punched me in the head or something like that. I would have thought, great, thank you. You know, because, you know, we were convinced that Prabhupada is external manifestation of the super soul. Whatever he does, it's being inspired by Krishna, and it's all auspicious. You know, so I think that kind of gone way over time. But anyway, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. So I don't see any Rabindranath here. Kind of. Does anybody like to ask a question or add anything? Or, yeah, Prabhu. Yeah, thank you. Is there a microphone? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a very nice class. I'll try to ask this question correctly. I might be asking it wrong, so forgive me. Correct me. Mm-hmm. So did Srila Prabhupada said that his devotees should become spiritual masters? And if so, then how are we trained up on a daily basis to be next acharyas, next spiritual masters and powerful preachers? Or it's something that comes from inner inspiration or from Krishna's mercy? Or there should be actually like very intense training? And my second question is about...
Can I ask the first one first?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Okay, so that's a really good question. I thank you for asking that, because I actually had a conclusion here, you know, and I forgot all about it, but that'll help me present it. That, yeah, Prabhupada did want all his followers to become spiritual masters. But, you know, there's different types of spiritual masters. There's the Vatma Pradakshina Guru, there's a Shiksha Guru and a Diksha Guru, okay? And so, you know, it's not necessarily that everybody has to become a Diksha Guru. That's one point that can be made. Another point is that about 1970, I guess it was 77 already, it was in Vrindavan, and this man, I forget his name, he came to Prabhupada and he was asking about, well, who is, you know, you're Prabhupada, when you leave, who's going to take over your movement? Who's going to lead your movement? You know? And Prabhupada didn't say to this, well, he said, all of these people, all of them, whoever follows, they will lead. You see? So that's the idea, that Prabhupada wanted all his devotees to become leaders, spiritual masters, you know, of at least one kind, one of those three, you know. And who will do that? Anybody who follows, that's the qualification. See, so, you know, today is a very special day, disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada. So today's a good day to kind of, you know, rededicate ourselves. And because, as you said, Prabhupada did want that, as you were implying. Prabhupada did want that. He wanted all of us to become, to carry on the legacy. To whatever degree we're capable of doing it. Obviously, everybody's got different talents and abilities and so forth, and different levels of surrender, you know, different levels of Krishna consciousness. But what's true for right across the board is that all of us are here, and we have something to offer, and we have to try to, you know, once again, focus on that what Prabhupada wanted, that he wanted us to, you know, carry on the legacy, push on the mission. So it's a good opportunity, you know, days like this to really reflect on that and rededicate ourselves, you know, and just make sure that in our lives that we have our chanting of 16 rounds as a top priority, following the regulative principles, trying to do some service, you know, studying Prabhupada's books or listening to him speak, associating with sincere followers like that. So, and in that sense, if we do that, then we're becoming gurus. If not Diksha gurus, Shiksha gurus, if not Shiksha gurus, Vatma Pradakshina gurus. And, you know, all those things are important. So that's the answer to the first question. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Second question.
My second question is, for a while it's been bothering me, so that's why I have to ask again. It's about offering milk. So we are purchasing milk from the farms where they slaughter the cow. So we offer it to Krishna, but isn't it still karma if we purchase that milk from such a place? Because it's like we're supporting the slaughterhouse. We're buying milk from there. So just to understand, when we offer it to Krishna, is it purified and there's no karma, or that milk is still purchased from the place where a cow is going to be slaughtered? So for me, like, I can't find the answer.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be able to give you probably an answer that's going to satisfy you, but I'll say this, that it's a controversial point. Certainly, you know, Prabhupada was aware of what went on in slaughterhouses. It's not like it's changed that much, you know, in 50 years, the same sort of thing is going on. And apparently Prabhupada himself did drink milk that came from those, you know, sources, so that's like an argument in support of that. And he did give the menu for the Sunday feast, which included, you know, things cooked in ghee and this and that. So that's there. So, you know, there are devotees who can make a pretty good case. Yeah, I'm going to get to you. Don't worry. These devotees, Archie just kind of biting up. You know, devotees who can make a good case in support of that, well, it's okay because Prabhupada himself drank that milk, and Prabhupada gave the menu for the Sunday feast, which included using products that were obtained from, you know, cruelty dairy like that, et cetera. But then there's devotees who, you know, can make a really strong case in opposition as well. You know, bringing in points like, oh, you know, Prabhupada, right towards the end, 1977, there's one conversation where Prabhupada said, therefore I say farm, 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 farm. And it's, you know, he repeated it four times. In other words, Prabhupada definitely wanted the devotees to have farming communities where, and farming community means cow protection. That's the main thing that goes on there. You grow your food to protect the cows. So Prabhupada definitely wanted, nobody would argue that Prabhupada didn't want us to move in that direction. He definitely wanted us to move in that direction of being, you know, self-sufficient and at least free, independent of cruelty dairy. Nothing, you know, that would have pleased Prabhupada tremendously. But whether we're supposed to, you know, just stop on it, you know, stop completely using it, do a, like a, what's the word, a cold turkey, you know, just stop using it altogether, and I don't know. And that's something, once again, that's been, it's being discussed at a GBC level to this very day from what I can understand. But I think it's safe, definitely it's safe to say that Prabhupada definitely wanted us to move away from using cruelty dairy, which means that we have to, you know, pay more attention to, you know, developing, supporting these devotees who are trying to start and maintain farm communities. So that's, you know, if you're really concerned about that, I think that practically speaking, the best thing you could do is you yourself could be a vegan, you know, personally, you know. I wouldn't go around, you know, go make it my top priority to go around to all the temples and tell everybody that if you're not a vegan, you know, you're really a, you're a very sinful person, and do whatever you can to support the development of the, you know, those types of projects which are going to make it possible in the future to, you know, so that we can be completely free from cruelty dairy. Archita. Well, yeah. With all due respect, okay. Go ahead. Yeah, you know, just, I'm going to wrap it up because this is, but just with all due respect to Archita and anybody else who probably got some opinion, this is sensitive and it's a controversial issue. And, you know, so many things could be said back and forth. And, I mean, just one little experience. About a month ago, Radhanath Maharaj had this program. He opened up the Kumi's Yoga Center just down the street there, and Tukaram attended. And after the Tukaram spoke to me about this whole issue, and I got to admit, you know, I was floored. You know, he's a bright guy. He did some research, and I was, you know, I couldn't say a word. I mean, so it's a sensitive thing. It's not like it's just one-sided. You know, you can make good, strong arguments for and against. But I, as I said, I think the most positive thing is just, and that everybody hopefully could agree upon, is Prabhupada definitely did want to see that eventually, that we, you know, moved in that direction. So do it yourself and support, you know, these projects, whether, you know, which are gradually moving us towards being able to be totally free from any dependency on cruelty free milk. Yeah, Martha.
One time I was on Sankirtan and I met a young man who had had a cow, and he kept a cow on a farm. He was in the country, and he said that keeping that cow was one of the most difficult things he'd ever had to do in his life in terms of economics. The cow, you know, was eating the thatch on his roof. The cow was, you know, in order to supply that cow, the tons and tons and tons of hay that cow needed in order for it to be healthy and satisfied was very difficult for him, so he had to actually eventually sell that cow. So he was a vegan. I said, well, where is that cow now? You know, I mean, you took, because what I'm saying is that having a cow is like having a baby. If you're not going to see that cow from the beginning of its life to the end of its life, then that's karma. You can't just take a cow, take her milk, and then decide, well, it's too much trouble for me, it's too much responsibility, I tried, but, and then on top of that, this is the part I find very difficult, is with devotees, they say, well, I want to be a vegan, but the temple isn't making it possible for me. And then they criticize the temple. They criticize the temple management, and they bring it up over and over and over again. So if you want to be a vegan and perform that austerity of not drinking milk or having cheese or any yogurt in your life, that's up to you, but don't use that as a platform to making other devotees feeling bad about it. You know, that's your responsibility, so take the responsibility. Don't purchase a cow and then later on decide that you're going to turn her over to the slaughterhouse. It's a lifelong commitment to have a cow, just like having a baby. You know, cows live for 18 to 25 years. You know, so I mean, this is very serious stuff. It's not just a simple thing that I'm going to be a vegan and other people are not vegan or not cool and I'm cool. It's not like that. And then, anyway, I just have a lot of emotions about that. I'm sorry. I just have to get that out.
Yeah, well, it's a very sensitive subject. It's a very controversial subject.
So. And then just one more thing I wanted to say is you said, Ebe Yas Gushuk Trivivana. And one time I read in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that I only read that book once because it's so long, but it said that the demigods are actually making an arrangement for the spiritual master to come here, that they sponsor him as though he was an ambassador from another country in order to be able to. And then when he's here, he makes the demigods are all working behind him and sponsoring him and making the arrangements for him to be able to do what he's able to do to transcend the modes of material nature within such a harsh environment. So he's not only known throughout the three worlds, but he's being sponsored by all the higher entities.
You read that in where we had Bhagavatamrita? Was that right? Yeah, it's like as I said, there was that one sentence like in some purport first canon. Prabhupada says an invisible chain of cooperation between, you know, the devotees of the Lord and the demigods and like that. So I think that's what Prabhupada was referring to there. So should we wrap it up or?
I do.
Okay. All right. So.
So, thank you very much. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada said that the spiritual master might—I don't know exactly—might come or taking shelter of Srimati Radharani. Say Srimati Radharani, and then
confidential associate of Radharani or manifestation of Lord Nityananda.
Can you elaborate more on that?
Well, confidential associate of Radharani. I think that's kind of like.
So I at least my mind or. And understand that, you know, there's some gurus who come from Radharani's camp and another gurus who come from Nityananda's camp. So that's why I want you can elaborate more on that.
I don't think I can. I mean, it's just, you know, as I said, some gurus are probably Manjaris, gopis who are here and, you know, they're performing the service of being like a human being and a guru while they're here, and that's what's referred to in that verse, Nikunjayuna Radhikala Siva. You know, they're actually a siddha deha, their eternal relationship with Krishna is as a gopi, which a manjari is a particular category of gopi. What was the other one about the representative of Lord Nityananda? Manifestation of Lord Nityananda? Manifested representation of Srila Nityananda. They're being empowered by, maybe a devotee could be both. Maybe he could be, you know, in his eternal, in his swarup, he could be a gopi, but at least when he's playing this role of the acharya, he's being empowered by Lord Nityananda to perform that service of reaching out and trying to deliver the conditioned souls. I don't know if that's correct answer, good answer, satisfying answer, correct answer. Somebody else want to Judah Karmapu, you have something on that point? Okay. Good. Yeah, let's talk loud.
I just want to make a little comment about Prabhupada's desire for us to drink milk. And it's in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam. I can't remember which purport, But it's a very long purport, and Prabhupada talks very clearly about the importance of drinking milk. And he was saying how drinking milk actually increases the duration of life. And he was talking about also cow protection. And I know that it was said in the earlier days of the movement that I joined in 1970, and I remember there was the talk about, well, milk has vitamin D in it, and that may come from fish oil, and the devotees brought that point to Prabhupada's attention, and Prabhupada still wanted us to drink milk. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. But once again, I appreciate your comment. It's shastrically based, and you know, you could give an instance of like an anecdote with Prabhupada. But as I said, there's a lot of things that could be said about this, you know, on both sides. And in all fairness to both sides, this is really something probably that, you know, since it's obviously something devotees are concerned about, this should be like a separate Ishtagosti. And, you know, with it's discussed, this particular issue can be discussed there, and everybody could, you know, go home and do their homework and do their research and come and, you know, let's discuss it. Bring it, you know, bring out all the points and, you know, and then see what comes out of that. Because there's a lot of things that could be said both ways. It's in all fairness to both sides.
Thank you, Prabhu. If anybody would like to hear any further on the topic, any more questions or doubts, there is a very intelligent presentation done by Tukaram. I think you mentioned that. And he did that presentation in front of all the GVCs, and some of them took it by heart and individually doing what they need to do according to their understanding, in spite of the differences that we might have. So if anybody would like to hear more, this presentation is Tukaram, was the protection, farm community and protection, still there in Dandavas.
Yeah, you could just go to just go to YouTube. And then I found it like that on YouTube.
Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Any questions on anything other than should we not drink milk? Okay, thank you very much. Kuntraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Pijai, Srila Prabhupada, Pijai.